in Sipori, Erev Shabbos, how do they prepare their grisin and their beans or whatever you want to call it? It says that they mix them with vinegar. Of course, I don't mean to imply that they use trefa vinegar. He just wants to say that people did use vinegar with these beans in order to give it a taste.
Right. If vinegar happened to have not been ripe by accident,
right,
and they used it in the beans, and the beans wouldn't be ripe.
Right.
Is that the problem now?
If it were vinegar which was made from Yain Nesach, Goyish vinegar, in other words, then in that case, it would make it treif, because if the taste is good, that people are using it, then in that particular case, it being a good taste, it's no good. That's all. This is what they're trying to say over here. Right. And they call that particular meal shachlaim. Shachlaim normally means cress, but obviously we're talking not about cress. Cress. Usually shachlaim. They're like watercress, you know.
Oh, cress.
Cress, right. But here it doesn't mean that. Okay. People can call things all kinds of things, you know. In New York, we knew the word soda. We never heard the word pop. But in Massachusetts, it became pop.
How about tonic?
Tonic, right, right, tonic.
Tonic,
tonic.
Here,
tonic pop,
what's
exactly,
tonic?
Right, right.
Tonic.
Right. In New York, Boston. Soda is tonic.
Oh, tonic.
Yeah, New Yorkers don't know that word.
No. So, in Sipori, what they call shachlaim, somebody else would not know what it means. Okay. It's not the same as shachlaim, simply says. All right. I'm a Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Noi Sein Tam Nefgam She'amru. It says, when they were talking about, you know, spoiling the taste, Lo sheyomru kederezu chasera melach yisera, melach chasera, or tavlin yisera, tavlin. I should read it as follows: Lo sheyomru kederezu chasera melach yisera melach chasera tavlin yisera tavlin. What he's saying, what Reish Lakish is saying, is that when we deal with the problem of Nesin Tam Lefgam, right, that it spoils the taste, or the taste is improved. He says, we're not talking about whether it needs salt or it doesn't need salt, whether it needs more spices or it doesn't need spices, there are not enough spices in it or something like that. We're not talking about that, he says. Elo kol she'ein chasera klum. No, that's not. That doesn't lack any of these things. But the eino ne'echeles, why aren't we eating it? Mipnei zeh, not for this reason, right? But instead, something else is the reason that it spoils. That's the point that he's trying to make. It's not, in other words, whether you're cooking with salt or without salt, does it have it, does it not have it, or something, you know. Because we know, for many people, to add a little salt, you know, improves the flavor, right? The same thing with spices, it'll improve the flavor. But we're not talking about that kind of an improvement. That's perfectly okay. What we are talking about is, if some forbidden substance, in other words, comes in, into contact, that either improves the taste, or it spoils the taste. This is what he wants to say. The Iko de Amre, and there is those who say, Omer Reish Lakish, that what Reish Lakish said is, they said, Tam Nefgam, this business where we say it's spoiled, She Omer, that they're talking about, Ein Omerim Kederizu Chasira Melach, Yisira Melach, Chasira Tavdin, Yisira Tavdin. Same as we had before, namely that either this food that's cooking needs salt, has too much salt, needs spices, too spicy, or something like that. Ela hashto miha ha pagala. But right now something happened which spoiled it. So in other words, they're just reinforcing the same teaching. Okay. Omar Rabbi Bohu, Rabbi Bohu said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan said, Kol Shata Amor Ma Moshoi Osur, and Lokin Olav. So, this is a new principle that's now introduced. What is Tamo Mamosho? Means that, first of all, it has taste, and secondly, it also has the substance itself that's giving it the taste. Now, naturally, what are we talking about? We're talking about that this then comes into contact with something else, and, you know, it's no good. It spoils the taste, right? Or maybe it improves the taste. But now it's, you know, it has both taste and also actually pieces or something like that, you know, that's there, the substance, mamash, it's there. So it's prohibited. And not only that, but if you have prohibited things and naturally you eat it or something like that, then in that case, Lokinolov, you can get malchus. In other words, they can give you a good shmeis, you know, for disobeying the teachings of the Torah. And he says, "Bzehu kezayis bichtei achilas poras." He says, "What quantity are we talking about? We're talking about where it's at least a kezias, in other words, an olive size of food. In other words, not a tiny speck or something or other, but something which is, you know, already has some size to it, the size of an olive, whatever that means." Because I don't have to tell you. I wonder myself, what do they mean by kezias? To me, a kezias means it looks, you know, something like this, right? Right. But we are commanded, of course, to eat a kezias matzah at the Seder, right? Does your matzah look like this? It's much bigger in size. So that's why they say, well, if you would crush the matzah, then it would be reduced to the size of an olive.
It's
or
like
maybe
taking a bite.
Yeah, something like that.
A good big bite of pasta.
Right, right. And you have a similar problem also where it's kibetza. In other words, if the size of an egg. Again, what kind of an egg?
Robinson.
Small eggs, medium sized eggs. Large eggs, extra large. I don't know what to tell you. Jumbo. So they try to express it in terms of how many grams would it be, or something like that. So there are charts, you know, with measures. How many grams would a kezias be? How many grams would a kibetza be? But even so, there's disagreement as to the quantity. Some willing to accept a smaller quantity, some are willing to accept a larger quantity, and so on. It may or may not. Because with food, you know, then usually this would be it, right? For other measurements, of course, then you have dry measures, liquid measures, and things like that, depending upon what it is. But with food in general, these are two of them. Now, what is kedei bichdei achilas pras? Pras means literally half. The idea being that how much time does it take for a person to eat half a loaf of bread? Half a loaf of bread, right. Again, I don't have to tell you how big is the loaf or anything like that. You know, that's a problem. But the idea being that, right, if it's already reached that particular point, then in that case, as far as this case is concerned, if you eat even just a small amount, the olive size, and you eat it not in 1 minute, But even during the time that it takes to eat half a loaf, you're still chewing and chewing and chewing upon it or something like that. Then in that particular case, if it's tamo mamasho, in other words, has both the flavor and also actual pieces, substances, you know, that are in it, then in that particular case, then you're in violation and you deserve malchus. Naturally, if it would be a smaller amount or within a lesser amount of time or something like that, then in that particular case, you shouldn't be eating it, but you wouldn't be subject to malchus. That's the idea. Right.
Question.
Right.
But the
yeah.
family is just there, he's in his own house.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
He has to go to the authorities and tell them he ate it, and then they'll give him the malchus. How does that work?
Well, obviously, people saw him doing it.
Someone has to see him.
Someone saw him doing it.
So
it's
got to be like an
academy. Yeah, there have to be witnesses and so on and so forth. Yeah, because malchus, I don't have to tell you, that already is in the category where it's correct. You need at least two witnesses in order to testify to that effect. Right. Because, you know, it's considered like almost like a form of capital punishment,
yes.
Except it's not capital punishment.
It's,
right.
It's
but it's a serious punishment.
It's the lashes.
Right, lashes, exactly. Right. Tamo v'loma mosho. Right. So now he says, oh, you're right, here's the next side. And we'll start it, but I think I'm running out of steam and a little tired tonight. In the time of the Talmud, as long as it still had a Bezdin that was functioning and it had authority, the backing of the government, then in that particular case it was possible to give malchus. They gave malchus for various reasons, violations of the law. But sometimes it was what they would call malchus mardus, which means that because you are rebelling, in other words, you refuse to accept the teachings of the rabbis or whatever, they also, there's a possibility, for various offenses that the Bezdin could declare that. And of course, we had a Gemara in Marcus, in which this is one of the main themes that was discussed, although in Marcus you have a lot of other things too, but this is one of the major areas that we learned about malchus, how it's administered, how many lashes is a person given, and things like that, and if a person is medically unable to withstand more than this or that and so on, then you know, what is the rule in that particular case and so on.
Is this the basis that later I'm assuming the Christian community took up the business about lashes for a child, you know, spare the rod and spoil the child if they had to hit the child. Was that?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, they could always go to the Bible and, right, some kind of a justification.
Right.
Yeah.
Because among Jewish parents, that was not a custom.
No, not normally. Not normally. But on the other hand, this week we'll be reading Parsha Kisetse. And right at the beginning of the Parsha, we read the story about Bein Sorer Umore, a rebellious child, right? He doesn't want to listen to his father and mother, and they come to the Bezdin to complain about him and so on. He guzzles so much food and drink and everything else. He doesn't listen to us. Whatever we ask him to do, he refuses to do, etc., etc. And he could be punished. So, there's another Gemara that says that Bein Sorer Umore, actually, it never happened. But it's a mashal. Mashal meaning, you know, that it's an example that in order to teach parents that they have to be able, you know, to talk to their children, teach them not to behave in the manner that the Bein Sorer Umore does, and so on and so forth. So, this is one of these things, right? Okay. So, what if it is tamo v'leima mosho? In other words, there's the taste, right? Mm-hmm. But there's no actual substance in it? Well, it still is awesome because we said what? They said tamo, right? If it gives flavor, and the flavor is good. So even if, you know, you don't see actually the piece or something like that in there, but it's still prohibited, also. But we ain't looking a lot, right? But we do not give malchus for violation of this. The im riba tam lefgam mutar. But on the other hand, if it increased the you know, the tam and it made it spoiled, it spoiled the taste, then in that particular case, it would be permissible. Okay, so I think we shall stop at this particular point, and we'll continue from here next week in Yetzer Hashem. So we're now on the top of page Sabach Zayin Omid Beis 67b. Right. Okay. My apologies. I thought that I had recorded last week. I know that I was playing, but I may have pressed the wrong button or something.
Okay.
Huh? Yes. Okay, so anyway, tonight is the 5th of September in the year 2007, and it's 1 week before Rosh Hashanah, and we are on Aved Zarah Dach Samaches. But inasmuch as apparently I forgot to... or something went wrong with the recording, so hopefully now we'll record. Let me just see that it's working. Okay, all right. What we learned last week, we were discussing several things. The last thing that we found on the tape was what we have at the top of page Sabach Zayin on the base over there. We were talking about Tamoy Mamoshe. What is Tamo? Tamo means that there's a taste, and Mamoshe means that there's actually something in there also. So, on the previous side, you know, some side, the very bottom of an Aleph over there, so we see that there is a difference of opinion, and we discovered that if there's only taste alone, then in that case, ain lok in the love. You do not give malchus for it. But if there's also, together with taste, something, you know, which is mamoshes, you know, a real something that's treif in there, then in that particular case, you're liable for malchus. All right, so that's what the top says over there. And then they continue again with the general area of Nesen Tam Levgan, which is, as you can see, it occupies page after page in this particular chapter. And even with the new material tonight, it's still going to be a problem. Nesen Tam Levgan, whether you have the substance which is no good, you know, which is treif, whatever it may be, whether it's Yayin Nesech or whether it's something treif, that you throw in together with something that's kosher. So if it spoils the taste, then we say that it's mutter, it's permissible. But if it improves the taste, then in that particular case, we see that it's prohibited. But nevertheless, we saw that there is a difference of opinion, even concerning this last ruling, because as it goes down, a little further down on this particular daf, so it says over there that there is a difference of opinion between between Rabbi Meir and between Rabbi Shimon, that as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, he says that Nesin Tam Levgam, even, in other words, if it spoils the taste, it's still no good, it's still usur. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, the general feeling is that Nesin Tam Levgam, right, is permissible, right? So we're going to see that this is going to continue also right now with variations, okay?
We are on
Samaches of an aleph, but I'm reviewing what we had on the previous page for a few moments. Okay, all right, and then they went into a different area, and that was the question about can you kosher something if it is the very same day in which it became treif?
So same day what?
That it became treif. And what did we discover? Discover you have to wait 24 hours. Right.
24 hours.
Right. You cannot kosher something which has been yomo. Okay. So this, you know, something that we have to remember in general when it comes to koshering, whether it's something that became treif or koshering for Pesach, whatever it may be, you have to put it aside for 24 hours before. Naturally, you clean it beforehand, but then you cannot, kosher it actually for 24 hours. Okay. Then on Samaches, the new page that we started last week as well, so we saw that new idea is introduced at this point, and that's on the fourth line over there, Omar Ula. As Ula said, he says, "Machlekes sheish biach lefseif pogam." In other words, there is a difference of opinion when it comes to the problem whether, if at first the treif material that went in improves the taste, and then eventually the taste is spoiled. Do we consider that? Because at the end the taste is spoiled, therefore it is what? Permissible. Or do we say that inasmuch as to begin with it had improved the taste, so that's it, it's no good, period. It's awesome, okay? This is a new area over there. And they brought in the business about the beans, the grape bin, or the beans, whatever you want to call them, that it says over there. Yes. Goyish and Ophel Asur Gris and Seinanim, right? These were cold to begin with, the beans, right? And then he hitichim, and then he heated them up. So, Nase Kemisha Hishbiach Lise Pogat, the Osir. So, his opinion is then that, inasmuch as even though at the end, the taste was no good, but inasmuch as at first when you poured in, let's say, the treif of vinegar or something like that, it improved the taste to begin with, so therefore it's prohibited. This is according to the opinion of Rav Huda. So this is where we are right now. Pardon me? Grisen. Grisen, he translates it as beans. Beans that you split or something like that, in order to have taste or something like that. The reason why I'm a little hesitant is because usually they translate it as grapen, and grapen is, it's what you make in the kasher. Buckwheat or something like that, right? That's usually what the explanation is. So that's why I say you can call it one thing or you call it something else. But the question is, what exactly is the substance? I don't know. The important thing is, pardon me? Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. But, they used to use it to make a kasha and something like that. Right. So, All right. So here's where we are right now. All right. So first of all, we have this opinion of Rav Huda. And then there is Rav Chaga. This is on the fifth line over there, where he says, he says, Yain shenofal l'seich hadoshim v'chaybet shenofal l'seich grisim. He says, also, he says of wine, meaning, of course, Yain esach, which fell into lentils, or vinegar, which fell into these grisim, into these beans, says it's also Rab Shimon Matir. So we see already that there is a difference of opinion in that. What is Rab Shimon's opinion? He would seem to say then that as long as the taste got spoiled eventually, so it would be permissible. This seems to be his stand right now. Okay? So, first of all, Ula says, Chagi, you didn't understand what's going on over there. And he says, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about going to know Father Sirk Greece and Saint Anin, right? As I mentioned before, it fell into these beans that are cold, Vihirtichim, and he heated them up. And Nasa, Kamisha, Vishpech, Vishpech, Pogal, Mihosu. That's his opinion. All right. And now, what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Rabbi Yochanan, Omar, he said, the Poge Miyakora Machlokes. He says, where did the rotten taste come in? Was it at the beginning of the process, or was it later in the process? Okay? That there's this opinion, this difference of opinion between Rabbi Shimon and whoever has a contrary point of view. Okay? This is what he's saying. So, to begin with, right, the Gemara continues over there. So, Ibaruhu, they asked the question, but Pogam in Ikora, Machlokes, Avol Hishbiach, and if so, Pogam, the recall also. But there is an opinion that says that if it was spoiled to begin with, right, there may be a point of argument between them. But if it got better, if it improved the taste, and at the end it spoiled it, everybody says that it's prohibited. Oh, Dilma, or maybe Vein Bezu Machlokes. Maybe the difference of opinion is makes no difference whether we're arguing about at what point did it get spoiled, at the beginning or at the end. And for this, we don't have an answer because Teiku means we didn't resolve this question. All right. So now the new material begins over here. Omar Rav Amram. So Rav Amram said, Efshar, he says, it's possible. Iso Lahor, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Lo Kanya Lo B'Masnisen. Is it possible, he says, that Rabbi Yochanan would quote something and we haven't learned it anywhere else in the Mishnah? Norfolk. So he went out, dark, he looked very carefully throughout the Mishnayos, the Ashkach, and he finally came up with something that they found. Did not. As we have learned, the Mishnah, and this Mishnah is in Orlo. Orlo, if you remember, deals primarily with fruit of a tree that during the first 3 years it cannot be used. In the fourth year, they would take it to Yerushalayim and rejoice with it. And then, beginning with the fifth year, at that particular point, you could use it without any problems, whatever. Okay? So, there it says as follows. Yeah. The quotation is, Se'or shel chulin. Shenafal the socha isa the yeshbo kedela hachmis veyachmisa veyachakach nafal seor shel truma or shel kilei akerem the yeshbo kedela hachmis is also kind of a long sentence. What it says is as follows: seor. What is seor? Seor we translate as leavening, but in reality, I would say that probably refers to yeast. This is really the yeast, in all probability, is what they're talking about. Because, you know, this is yeast is one of the prime leavening substances, okay? So, he says, okay, you have seor, and it's chulin. All right, what is chulin? Chulin, as we know, means that, you know, the ordinary kind. In contrast to what? In contrast always to something which is holy. Okay? Kodesh. Or Kodesh, or something like that. Now, naturally, what are we talking about over here? What would be the contrast? The contrast would be Truma. Because remember, Truma has to be in a state of purity And also, it has to be eaten by the Kohen in a state of purity. And can a non-Kohen eat Truma? No. Not allowed to. Okay? So, here we have the following case. Alright, we have this yeast, if you will, which is the way I prefer to think of it, okay? And it's chulin, it's ordinary. And then what happened? Okay, so it fell into dough, right? And when it fell into dough, what did it do? It had enough power in it to begin to turn that dough into chametz, okay? Into chametz. And that's exactly what happened. Ech mitzah, and target became chametzik. Okay. The achakach, and afterwards, right, nofas oshel truma, then into this dough fell yeast which was for truma, also oral yeast which was shalkilei hakerem. What kind of a yeast exactly this is, I'm not quite sure, but it means the kilei hakerem, remember, it means that it's mixed plants, okay? Mixed plants. Technically, kilei hakerem refers to a vineyard. It's not allowed to sow wheat within a vineyard or something like that, right? It's not allowed, right? It's kilayim, exactly. So that's why they call it kilei hakerem, right?
Well, in
yes.
In this case, you have two kinds of yeast, the holy kind,
right? Right,
so,
but there's more than that. There's also okay. The dough now it started off with ordinary yeast,
right.
Okay, and became chametz. Okay, got solid leavening. Okay, and for some reason or other, don't know why, but all of a sudden it fell into it yeast which was truma. Or, I have to say and in this case, because they're going to say that it happened simultaneously, okay? And yeast that was made of, let's say, of grain which had been planted in a vineyard or something, kiliakarim. But obviously, I mean, you don't make yeast out of grapes, but you do make it from grain. And this grain was planted in the vineyard, so that therefore it was a transgression of the law, which is against, you know, having this mixed vegetation in that case, okay? So they fell into also the same piece of leavening, you know, the dough that was there. The yeshbo kidei lahachmitz. And also, well, in this case, O means or. So in other words, either one or the other fell in. This is case number one, and each yeast that fell in had the ability also to add the leavening. Understand? So, in that particular case, so what do you say? I mean, what can you do with the dough? So they say it's awesome. It's prohibited. This dough cannot be used because, adding the, you know, either a forbidden substance, well, they're both forbidden in the sense that it was chulin. It was not holy, do you understand? So if something holy fell in, then automatically it means that the holy part is no good anymore, right? It can't be eaten by the Kohen. Kohen cannot eat, if he's eating truma, he can't eat chulin. Not talking about ordinary food, but I'm talking about specifically if it's meant to be truma. That's what I mean. Yes. Right.
And
This is a very tough question to answer, and I'll tell you why. Can an ordinary person eat truma? We said no. It's a violation. So the question is there a possibility of nullifying it? In which case, of course, the kohen still cannot eat it because it's not truma. But could an ordinary person eat it, you know, is chulim or something like that? So that already is subject to various rules. Rule, for example, that we had a few weeks ago that we repeated again, namely min bimino. If it's the same type of thing and they mix, you can't tell one apart from the other. And we said that min bimino is also, it's prohibited. On the other hand, if it's only a very tiny piece, maybe it's subject to the other law that says, you know, that if it's 60 times the amount, or maybe 100 times the amount, or 200 times the amount, every, you know, there are different measures that are given. So maybe we would say that it's nullified, and then it could be used. Again, it's chulin, definitely not as truma.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even the kalim could not be mixed. I mean, we worry about not mixing fleshik with milchik. But in those days, they had to worry also about not to mix kalim, which we used to prepare holy foods, you know, like truma, as compared to chulin. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. However, this is, we say, this is what the Mishnah said in Orla, right? And lo and behold, for Rab Shimon Matir, but Rab Shimon says it's okay, you can use it. That's why I say it's machlokes, right?
Before we go away from the truma,
right?
The ordinary person is the one who gave the truma, right?
All right, right.
So the obligation to take care of how the truma was prepared is on each person who
gives it to the kohen. Right.
So the obligation is that they have to see that it's pure.
Absolutely.
Before they give it.
Absolutely. And the kohen has to be in a state of purity in order to eat it. Exactly. Yeah. You know, we're so far from the whole concept of Tara the Tuma. I mean, because since the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and once they no longer had the Torah Aduma, you know, the ashes that could be used, the Mechatos, the water that was mixed with the ashes of the Torah Aduma in order to cleanse you from, let's say, if you came in contact with the dead or something like that, which... or other sources for tuba, a reptile or something like that, you know, the different things. The vela in some cases, a carcass of an animal. That we don't have these things today. Maybe we're lucky. It's a very, very complicated thing to learn. You know. All right, but at any rate, we see that the Mishnah itself said that it's also, and yet along comes Rabbi Shimon and he says, it's matir. He permits it. And so they say, Ho-ho-ho, in this particular case, the porgam may ikoru, right? It got spoiled. Right from the beginning, right? Uflige, and still there is a machlokes about it. So Abba Rab Zera, comes along and says, Shani Isa, he says, dough is an unusual business, he says. Well, it's not an ordinary situation that will apply to other kinds of foods. That's what he's trying to say. But the dough is unusual in this respect. Because the dough itself can be used in order to make chametz, many other you know, doughs as well. In other words, all you need is what? A little bit yeast from this and put it into something else. And that becomes also chomes. And take a piece from that, and you know. So, in other words, he says, this is a different situation, he says.
They call it the starter, don't they?
Right.
They take a little cold,
right, right.
Starter. Yeah.
Right, yeah. For a baker, it's very, very important.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't have to tell you that when it comes to Pesach, the wonder is that we have so many things today on the grocery shelves for Pesach that we did not know in the days of our youth. It's a fact, though.
Yeah.
Who ever heard of Pesach Nicker Cheerios?
Luxury
things.
Oh, as a matter of fact, I used
matzo bell is an old business. I mean, because matzo bell, what they do, they take matzo and they grind it up and make it into a meal. I mean, so that's matzo bell.
And farfel they break up in pieces.
Right, exactly. Right, right. But they're all matzo. But they can turn the same thing. You can turn the matzo bell into cereal and stuff like that. Who ever heard of that, right?
Break up the
Okay. Tashma. So he says, come and listen. Yeah, that's what Tafshin. Tashma. Listen. Okay, come and listen. Tor in Aramaic means come. Shema, of course. You know. We know that. All right. Come and listen. So or shall trumo v'shal chulin shen noflu b'tocha isof b'zeh k'day lahachmitz b'zeh k'day lahachmitz. Alright, here we have a situation that was a little bit different from the first case. Case number one said what? That you started with chulin, right? And in it fell yeast of truma, or see that's o, or of the Kiliyah, in other words, grain that had been grown in a vineyard or something like that. At any rate, it's something that's prohibited, okay? So, there it's a substance fell into it, one substance. This case, right now, if we analyze it, we see that here we have so Urshel Truma. First of all, we start out with yeast, which was for Truma. All right. Not Chulon this time, but for Truma. Okay? Vishal Chulon should not flow to Tocha Yisa. And then, all of a sudden, what happened? We have over here now that also, besides Truma, so Chulon also. They fell into the dough, and each one had the ability by itself to become chametz, right? And each one was able to do it, and then together they made the whole thing chametz stick. So he says it's awesome. This is prohibited. All right. In other words, we have two substances, but this time the two of them fell in, so to speak, into a pot together. Okay, both chul and the truma at the same time. This is what he's trying to say. Before it was chulin, into which something, you know, either or fell in, and here we have that both chulin and truma, they fell in together in the same pot. Okay? In the same pot.
If they're not a Kohen, could they eat it?
A non-Kohen cannot eat it.
Oh.
That's the idea. Yeah, because of the truma pot.
Oh, I see.
Because of that, you
see.
Even though
right. It's mixed with something else.
They mix. And each one has the ability to create chametz, and together they created more chametz. Okay? Yes. David.
Says,
Right, they fell into the dough. The dough didn't... The dough was there in a pot or a bowl, let's say in a mixing bowl, right? There was dough in there. But the dough itself still had not risen because of the fact that it did not have any yeast in it, okay? So, all of a sudden, two pieces of yeast fall in. One is for chulin and the other one is for truma, and each of them can cause the leavening to take place, okay? So, what's the story? So it says over here, right? Also, it's prohibited. And along comes Rabbi Shimon, and what does he say? Okay. Rabbi Shimon Matir, he says, it's okay. Third line from the bottom. Third line from the bottom. You see it? Fourth and third line from the bottom.
First long line.
Yeah. So shatruvam shalchulim, right? Shanaflo toicha isa, right? Bezekadei lahachmitz, bezekadei lahachmitz. In other words, each one has the power to do, you know, to make chomitzik. Vechimsu and Taka, what did they do? They leavened it. So it's also it's prohibited. At 19th of September in the year 2007, and we are between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur at this particular point. And we are continuing now in Avodah Zarah, Daf Sabaches. We're practically finished with the first Amud, and we're ready to begin in another few moments with the second Amud. All right. So, as we see, that in the second case, where they both fell in together, so at the same time, then according to Rabbi Shimon, he still says, it's okay. Even though Rabbi Meir, of course, says, you know, it's also. But if they fell in separately, then it all depends what was there to begin with. If it was chulin that was there to begin with, and then truma fell in, then in that particular case, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's permissible. But if it is truma to begin with, and chulin comes in, then in that particular case, he agrees with all the other rabbis, namely that it is prohibited. So this is where it stands at this particular moment. The ha'ocha, the pogami akora, so here again, it was spoiled right at the beginning, right? Ufligay, and again we see that there is a difference of opinion between the authorities. The chit heimo hochinama, and if you say, well, this too is just like Bitter Rabbi Zeira, something that Rabbi Zeira had said before, namely, he said, I'll quote Rashi at this particular point, the top line over there, the Chimetz Yosef Medai Shevachu. According to Rabbi Zeira, if you had so much literally souring, in other words, fermentation that the yeast caused in it, right? He says that's good because why? Because as we said, that's the inyan chibitz isis acheris, right? Because you can come and, you know, and the yeast would be affected in many other doughs to begin with. You know, they have a surplus of yeast, you could use it in order to ferment other doughs, okay? The Hokotani in Ophel Shotsrubo Techino, but nevertheless, what did we learn? We learned that first it was Truma, the Ishbiach, which was good, but if so, Pogab, and then at the end it spoiled because something fell into it that should not have been there, right? Murder Rabbi Shimon, and yet Rabbi Shimon agreed to it, so I'm quoting Rashi at this particular point, okay? So now they say, Toshma. Listen now, case number three. Okay? Case number three says, Misefa. Let's take a look at what it says further on. It said, Hayayin shenofal l'toch hadoshib, the chometz shenofal l'toch grisin, also. Alright? You had yayin nesach. Okay? And what happened? It fell into Adoshim. By the way, it could be not just wine, it could also be vinegar, which is made from wine. Okay? So it fell into lentils, Adoshim. Okay? Or the vinegar fell into grisin. Grisin, remember, those are those beans that are cracked in the middle, and, you know, they use vinegar in order to give it more taste and so on and so forth. But we're talking about, again, a vinegar which is made from, you know, yain nesach as its source, right? So, what did the Chachomim say? Chachomim said that it is prohibited, right? But the Rabbi Shimon matir, right? But nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon comes along and he says it's okay. And we see again that even though it was spoiled right from the moment, the minute that you put in the prohibited substance into the other one, right? And nevertheless, there is a difference of opinion between the authorities. The key theme, if you say, Hochinami, Kiddushonei Le Ulo Le Rabbi Chaga, that if it's an agreement with an explanation that Ulo gave to Rabbi Chaga, Kishehish Biach, in the Sof Pogam, right? That if at first it improved it, and then afterwards it spoiled it, right? Umi Pelige, and is there really a difference of opinion? Kishehish Biach, in the Sof Pogam? That, you know, if to begin with it was good and then it was spoiled. The Hakatani, didn't we learn that Nofal Shal Truma Techila Divrei HaKol, also that if it fell into the Truma to begin with, right, then immediately it is spoiled, right? The Hakatani, Nofal Shal Truma Techila Divrei HaKol also, right? The Truma fell in. This is a little bit different than what we had at the previous page, the previous side. It says if the Truma dough fell in, right, then everybody's in agreement that it's prohibited, right? So Elalav Shmamino B'Pogam B'Yakora Machlek. So we come back again to the original thing that whether it's spoiled to begin with, there's still in a difference of opinion as to whether it's permissible or not. I have to tell you that at this particular point, again, we have to try to straighten this out now, right? Okay. It's very complicated over here. What it winds up over here is, okay, to begin with, we say, under normal circumstances, right? If you have something which is good to begin with and then it gets spoiled, then what do we say? It's mutar. So along comes the case of the dough. And we said, well, here there's a difference of opinion as to whether it's mutar or asur. Rabbi Meir, to begin with, was of the opinion that it's asur. But Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay, but under what circumstances? Rabbi Shimon, excuse me. Rabbi Shimon, right, says that you're right, yeah, that it is permissible, right? But in one case, what did he say? He said that if you start with truma, and then, you know, the prohibited substance that fell in was either chulin or could be a kerem, and it had the ability, you know, to produce it was yeast, and it was, you know, powerful enough in order to carry out a yeasting process, so to speak. Then in that case he says that everybody is in agreement, which would mean that Rabbi Shimon is also in agreement in that particular case. So now they come back again to the question that started on the previous side of the page. We know that a simple case would be, you know, that you have something which is good, but then it gets spoiled, right? So fine, all right, so that we said in that case that it's, Tab of Pogam is mutter, right? The taste is spoiled, but in that particular case, you can eat it. Okay, it's permissible. Whereas, if it's Tab of the Shiradach, right? In other words, the taste is improved by the second substance that comes in, right? And in that particular case, we say that it's closer. So then they ask the following question, but what if we have a case like with this wine or vinegar falling in to either lentils or the cracked beans and so on and so forth, where we said at first when the wine or the lentils, the wine or the vinegar fell in, right? So it improved the taste. But afterwards, because it was a prohibited substance, so it spoiled the taste. So now the question is, do we go by the fact that at one time it had improved the taste and therefore it's prohibited? Or do we go about the fact that because subsequently it spoiled as a result of the addition, right? So in that particular case, we should say that it is permissible. So how do we judge this? So what was the difference of opinion? The difference of opinion in general was that if to begin with it was good and then got spoiled, that it's awesome. It's awesome. This is what we said. So this is how it stands at this particular point. Okay. All right. So now they ask the question. Okay. Hanitz losa bobe to katane lomali. What the heck in the world do we need three different examples that are mentioned? By the three examples, remember, first one was there and then something else fell in, right? Second case, two things fell in simultaneously, okay? And third case, the question is whether to begin with, if something, you know, it was good and then it gets spoiled afterwards, so you go by the fact that at the beginning it improved the taste, or do you go by the fact that subsequently it spoiled the taste? That's the question. So they want to know, why do we need all these three? So they say there's a reason. What is the reason? Okay. Right. So he says, yeah, by the way, those the word bobe that they use over there. It means like three divisions. Literally, it means three gates, but it means three divisions. Like you have in the Gemara, you know, you have Baba Kama, Baba Tzi, and Baba Basra, right? Yeah. The original meaning of Baba actually is gate.
Gate,
right. It's an Aramaic word. That's Hebrew. Baba, right. The Baba is Aramaic, right.
So gate.
Right.
So
how does that attach to the tree? Well, eventually what it meant is, you know, one part, two parts, three parts, and so on. So this is a three-part problem. Okay, that's what they want to say. So why do they have to have three different parts of this problem? Okay. Says Lemeli, what do I need it? Why? Why do I need these three different examples? So it says, Bishlamo, Baba, the Sefer. Alright, taking the last case that we had, Kom Hashmolon, we learn from that, Bipogain Biyakora Machloikis, right? That if something is spoiled to begin with, there's the difference of opinion, because if it improves the taste subsequently, then how do you judge it? Do you judge it, you know, that it's osso, or do you judge it that it is muta, right? Mitziyoso, then the case where the two of them fell in simultaneously. Mame ishbiyach lifsof pogam. There, take a look what happened. At first, it improved the taste. Remember, you know, that all the dough continued, you know, according to Rav Zeru we had a couple of minutes ago, that, you know, it produces a lot of dough, and that's good because you can use, I don't mean dough, I mean yeast, right? You can use this yeast in order to ferment more different dose. Okay, so this is Hishpiach right to begin with. It was good, but afterwards, you know, it spoils because, you know, you're still having something which is prohibited. Okay, so under there it said Direi HaKol, also everybody says it is prohibited. El Oresha, but the first example that we had, where first you had something, let's say Chulit, and then Truma fell into it, right? So Lomoli Hashta, what do I need it now? Mas Seifa, Tzoko B'Shabeach Klal, Asri Rabbanan. Just as the net result afterwards is that, you know, if it did not improve it at the end, but instead it spoiled it, and nevertheless the rabbi said it was prohibited, so Reisha Dekor B'Shabach Bepoyer said you have to ask a question where, when the taste to begin with was improved, then obviously it should be prohibited, right? So Amar Abaye, so Abaye said, Reisha the Rabbi Shimon, it's the rabbi, he says, I need the first example for Rabbi Shimon. I want to show, you know, how he reasons that it is what? That it is muta, right? I need it for that. The Hochika Avele, Rabban and Rabbi Shimon. And this is what the rabbi has said to Rabbi Shimon. Isa Zu Reuyo La Hakmitz Bishnei Shavas. Excuse me. This dough would be effective in 2 hours. It would take 2 hours for the yeast, not I mean the dough, I mean the yeast. Yeah, for this dough, the yeast that would come in, it would take normally 2 hours for it, you know, to become fermented. Okay. So, mi goram lo shetachmis b'shor achas. What happened to it that it didn't take 2 hours, but instead it only took 1 hour? So the answer is Isur. It was the prohibited substance that was falling in, came into it, right? This is what produced this speedier fermentation action. And therefore, they say, if that's the case, then it's no good because it improved. The time is improved, right? Instead of waiting 2 hours for it to rise, it took only an hour for it to rise, okay? So if it's to begin with, it's improved. And as a result of something, you know, also which improves it, then in that particular case, it's prohibited. So Rabbi Shimon, now about him. Kishehishbichu, Shenehem, Hishbichu. This already is that Rabbi Shimon says that when they improved, actually both of them were acting together to improve. Kishep Pogmo, Shnehem Pogmo. And if it spoiled, then both of them, in other words, the permitted and the prohibited substance, you know, they acted jointly in order to either improve or to spoil. So from this we would come to the conclusion that the Rabbi Shimon, let's toref heter the iser bahadur hadode, that something which is permitted and something which is prohibited can be added one to another. The litzer, and in that particular case, it is prohibited. Whereas Rabbi Shimon the Tahmei, the Omar Fidu Isavi Isadam and Safi. Okay, actually, we have to. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, the first phrase should really be the point of view of the rabbi. That's why I say it's a little bit confusing over here. Should really be their point of view, that they both you know, both the prohibited and the permitted substance, right, together they either improved or they spoiled it. And as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, then it would mean that, yeah, I'm not quite sure now whose point of view over here, right?
It's okay.
It was yes. But you know, it's a little bit mixed up over here, I have to tell you, right? But at any rate, you see, the reason why I say go down and to the next line, okay? Litzer says it should be prohibited. But Rabbi Shimon Ta'amei, the Yomar, Filo Yisra, V'Yisra, Damele Mistarfei. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Shimon, if you have two prohibited substances, so they still don't, they're not added together in order to create another prohibition. So, the sages who prohibit it, right? So they say that when you have the two of them added together, right? They make up a sufficient quantity in order to, to either improve or to spoil. And on that basis, therefore, we prohibit it. Whereas Rabbi Shimon, who says that it's permissible, it's because he considers that each factor is not considered to be added to another factor, even though they both are prohibited. So that's why he permits it. But as I say, it's a little bit puzzling to me, in all honesty. And
therefore, how
should it be? Right. Okay, now they give an example about this difference of opinion, whether you can add this or this or not. Ditnan, we have a Mishnah which says as follows: Orlo, the Kilei HaKerem Mitztorfin, and Rabbi Shimon Amir Ein Mitztorfin. Okay. Orlo, remember, is fruit during its first 3 years on the tree. Okay, that fruit is prohibited by a Jew to be used. Okay, Kilei HaKerem, this is like I explained before, a mixture of literally of wheat and the vine, but in general, Kilayim, you know, we extend it to a broader area, as the rabbis extend to a broader area of mixtures, right? And again, this is prohibited, right? So now, let's say that you have fruit that is orlo, a fruit that is kilei hakerem, okay? Now, if you have them both, so the question is, and they're mixed together, right? So you're having how many prohibited substances? You have now two different prohibited substances, right? And the rabbis say, add them together and you have a sufficient quantity to prohibit them. Let's say you had... let's say you had a peach from an olive tree, right? And you had also grapes from a Kilei HaKerem vine, okay? And you put them together in the bowl, okay? And you mix it with other fruit. So the question is, do you have enough prohibited fruit when mixed with perfectly, you know, not prohibited fruit to, let's say, be subject to the question of nullification? By 1 in 60, 1 in 100, 1 in 200, whatever the nullification should be, and so on.
You're
right.
Fruit, it hasn't been cooked, it's just in a bowl.
Right.
You actually can't mix them in a bowl.
Well, that's a question. Do you know the difference between them? Do you know how this peach looks different from another peach, or these grapes look different from other grapes? You don't. So that's why there's a threshold, right? So you go on the basis of how many did you put in over here, and see, you know, whether there's any grounds for nullification or not of it. This is the question. Maybe there are no grounds for nullification. Certainly if you add the two quantities together, then in that particular case, then you can't nullify it, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
On the other hand, according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that you cannot, you don't add one prohibited substance to the other, then in that particular case, maybe there will only be one of this and one of that, and many more, so that even if you add them and you have two, but still you may have 100 more pieces of fruit, you know, that are more than that, you understand? Something like that. So this is a question. And according to Rav Shimon, he was martyr. He permitted it. Okay, so this is a question. I think I'm going to stop at this particular point. I'm running out of steam. I'm very tired tonight. So, okay, let's see. Tonight is the 23rd of October, and we are now continuing in Avodah Zorah, Samaches Amid Beis, approximately the middle of the Daf. Okay. Now, we are dealing, as you heard from the last few words of the previous session, with a question about nullification. And as we saw, nullification sometimes depends upon the question of Nesin Tam Livgam, right? Where we learned that if something, a prohibited substance, spoils the taste, that in that case we said that it is mutar, it's permissible. Whereas if it improves the taste, then of course we said that it's no good. Okay. So now we have this Abaisa over here, Abaisa mit Abois. Okay? Mickey Mouse. Okay. Says Havu Achbaron. A certain mouse, the Nofal Chavisa, the Shechva, it fell into a barrel of beer. Doesn't
mouse?
Say why.
Mouse?
The mouse fell in, right? Well, I guess he wanted to take a drink, you know.
That was going
to
say. So
right.
He had a pretty good time.
He had a good time.
He had a really good time.
Right.
Yeah.
But the question is, can we drink this beer now that the mouse has been inside of it? This is the question, okay?
Yeah.
So, okay. Asare Rav Lahu Shifa. So, Rav, great authority in Babylonia, of course, he prohibited that beer. So, Baruha Rav Onan Kamei the Rav Sheshes. So, some of the rabbis came and they discussed the subject in the presence of Rav Sheshes. And they said, Neymar, shall we say that Kosova Nesin Tam Livgam? That's what that abbreviation is over there. You see, Nun Teslamit, that's Nesin Tam Livgam. That if it spoils the taste, right? Also, it's prohibited. Because why did Rav prohibit it? That's the question. Why did Rav prohibit it? On the basis of Nesin Tam Livgam, since it's going to spoil the beer, he should have said that you can take the beer and drink it. That's what he should have said. That's what they're arguing. Yeah, but this is the point that they're arguing right now. If it's spoiled, then it should be permissible, right? General principle, in fact. Okay, so of course the answer is that with every general principle, there are always exceptions. Well, we'll see that they're going to battle this back and forth over here. Okay. So, they want to know, right? So, Amaluhu Rav Sheshes. So, Rav Sheshes gave him an explanation. What did he say? He said, Be'alma, generally speaking, Sova Rav Nesen Tam Lufgam Muta. Rav, in general, holds that Nesen Tam Lufgam is permissible. The Hocha Chidushu, however, now, here we're dealing with something that is an unusual circumstance. A Chidush, something new. Different. The Ho Mimas Mois, Uvidila Yishiminev. In other words, in this particular case, it's such a disgusting thing that people are not going to use it anyway.
Right. What's the word for mouth?
Achbara. Oh. Achbara. Right. Achbar. Aramaic. Add an alf. Okay. Achbara. So, Vathilohochi. Aswe Rachmono. And therefore, even in such a situation, the Torah itself would prohibit it, right? So that therefore, Hilkoch, for this reason, then we see that Nesen Tam Lufgam, Nami Osur. Now, even though the taste is spoiled, here is a case where it's also prohibited. Okay? So far, so good. Omulei Rabbonin the Rav Sheshes. So, what did the other scholars say to Rav Sheshes? They said, Elo Beata, if that's the case, L'tabe Lach Biyovesh, then it should make it unclean, you know, no, make it Tome, right? Make it Tome, make it unclean, whether it is moist, wet, right, or whether it is dry. Now, obviously, why are they questioning this? Because when it comes to whether something is kosher or not kosher, sometimes if the object is dry, then in that particular case we would say that it did not spoil. It's a separate entity, in fact, it didn't affect anything else. Whereas if it's wet, then in that particular case it could spoil the other object. Right, okay, right. Yeah.
We already learned way back early on that, God forbid, a fly or a flea should go into the wine.
Right. What can you do?
You could sell it to the non-Jew.
No.
Use it.
You could even take a strainer and get rid of the fly or the flea.
Oh, why didn't it make it spoiled or something?
It didn't spoil in general because the quantity.
It was quantity.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was a barrel.
Right.
It wasn't spoiling.
Correct.
But if it was a glass?
Even in a glass, there's probably more liquid than there is the body of the fly.
For example, that the water has to be covered.
That's a different reason. The reason that we learned is that they were afraid that a serpent would crawl in during the night when everybody was asleep, help himself to a drink, and discharge poison into it. That's the reason why they said it has to be covered. Right.
So from that point of view, the rat, the mouse, it doesn't have venom, but to me, that was what I was thinking of when you said a mouse.
Right.
And I was thinking of, you know, those early lessons that we have had.
Right.
That there was a connection, which in event, actually there is.
Yes, of course.
That's what he's showing.
Little question, I mean, right. This is what they're arguing right now. That from the point of view, I mean, why did Rav prohibit it? So maybe the basic reason is because he says the thing is so disgusting that people in general won't want to touch it. In any case,
it might also be bring disease.
Right. All right. I mean, you could say all these things, but as we see, again, the basic question, however, is: was Rav correct in his interpretation or not? Should he have followed the strict rule that he himself normally followed, namely that it would be permissible? And if not, then why did he make an exception? So this is what they're trying to determine. So they continue with this discussion. All right, so they say to Rav Sheshes, Elo miyato litame lach v'yomish, right? So if that's the case, then it could cause tumor, right, whether it is dry or moist. it's moist or dry. Lach, lach is wet, moist. Yovesh is dry. So alama. So they say, why? Takednu, why? Tanan, didn't we learn a Mishnah? It happens to be a Mishnah in several different places over there, probably in Nido, right? Where it says, Mitamin Lachin Bia Mitamin Yuvation, namely, that it can convey tumor whether it, when it is moist, right, when it is wet, but it does not convey tumor when it is dry. So, in that particular case, what should we say about the mouse? Was the mouse wet, or was the mouse dry? So, inasmuch as we would have to say, since it was in the beer, it was wet. If it's wet, so it's, then it should be conducting, it should be conveying tumor, right? But they say, so what can you argue? So there is something else that you can argue about. So now they bring in an argument about Shechva Zera. Shechva Zera is a man's semen. Omar Ahmada. Yeah, okay. My eyes jumped down the line. All right. Okay, let me explain this. In the Torah it says that if a man has intercourse, or if a man has a flow of semen, then automatically he becomes, as we say, a balkeri, which means that he is unclean for that day. Okay? So that, before he can resume, shall we say, anything that has to do with sacredness, he should bathe. Okay? Preferably in the mikveh and so on. We're not so strict these days, about that, but nevertheless, there was a time, for example, when we have what we call the Takono of Ezra, that a person was not permitted to pray unless he was in such a state, or was not permitted to sit down to learn Torah unless he was in a state of cleanliness. So from this, we see that, they took the question of, of tumor very, very seriously. But the question is, what if you touch semen, okay? So, if it is wet, it says that in that particular case, it makes you tummy. But if the semen is dry, then it's not going to convey tumor. Okay? That's what the Mishnah Nita says, all right? So, if that's the case, then what is the parallel to the business with the mouse? The mouse is also in what state now? It's wet. It's moist. Okay, so in that case, then, this is the reason we might say that this is why Rav prohibited, not simply on the basis that it was disgusting, but also that it would, in its death, convey tumor. This is the question. Especially because we have a law in the Torah, again, about sheretz. If you touch a creeping creature or something like that that's dead, then in that particular case it could convey tumor, you see. So it's a whole myself. Okay. This is a very technical matter, as I assure you. And it's just that today most of these things are sort of relegated to the back room, But they say, how do we know that if the semen is wet, this is when it does it? So he explains, he says, because what is Shechvas Zera? Shechvas Zera means literally seed which is produced during cohabitation. Okay? So Omar Ahmadu, the Torah said, Bir Uyalahazriya, that for it to convey tuma, it has to be semen that is wet, because that is still possible, you know, it could still bring about pregnancy. It's still, what am I going to say?
Alive.
Right, okay, right. Whereas, you know, if it were dry, then obviously it can't do it anymore. Okay. So, the same thing says with the mouse, okay? That, right? So, it's the same thing. Namely, that ke'ed bosom, it's as if, you know, and instead of it's worse. All right. So far the argument, but the argument doesn't necessarily hold water. So, Maskif law, Rav Shimi Menahardo, he attacks, or he disagrees, you know, with this idea. Hello, how are you doing?
How are you, doctor? It's good to see
Well, a little you. Better, thank you. Not 100%, but certainly better than last week.
Right, hear that.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we're on Samaches towards the bottom of the page now. Omid Beis. Samaches, Omid Beis towards the bottom of the page. Okay.
I just asked
you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. We're on the first long line right now.
Okay.
Down the bottom over there. Okay. You see? Right.
Okay.
So, Rav Shimi then disagrees with this argument, and he says, Umi Mois, why do you say that the mouse is a disgusting creature? Bahalo Ola al Shulchan Shel Malachim. Why? Kings eat mice. It's served as a royal meal.
Is that a fact?
Apparently it was. So, we'll see in a second what the Gemara continues to say. But the fact is, look, the Goyim eat all kinds of things that to us are absolutely disgusting. It would never occur to me, for example, to eat snake meat.
But in the Torah, isn't there certain things that are detestable that we don't eat? No, we do eat.
Of course.
No, but we also have some that they mentioned that we don't eat.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't name mice, though.
Yes, they actually, Ekbar is also...
No, the word actually for a mouse there does not occur, you're right. But it doesn't mean that's necessarily, because we also have a tradition, and the tradition will also tell us in the world. The fact is, of all the creeping creatures, nothing is permissible except certain species of grasshoppers, that's all.
How about in locusts?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, locusts, right, that's what I mean, right. But apart from that, there's nothing over there. Falls in that category. Yeah, of course a rodent. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. A mouse is a rodent. Right.
Which would make it forbidden anyway.
Right. But listen, we know that people eat rats.
Oh.
Yeah, they do. China.
Right. This is supposed to be.
Yeah, they do. So apparently they did not hesitate, you know, to eat it. However, we'll see in a second what Rashi has to say over here.
Okay. That's my expert.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, when Rav Shimi argued this, you know, his point of view that the fact it is served on the royal table, actually, we learned something a long time ago. That if it's not served on the royal table, then in that particular case it would be kosher.
Anything served on the royal table?
We're talking about, you know, bishalakim, in other words, cooked foods, if you remember. We had that. Whereas if it were worthwhile to be served, then in that case it has to be kosher. I mean, you can't assume the, it has to be cooked by a Jew or under Jewish supervision or something like that. My grandson, who was here from Israel the other day, two of my grandsons came. So one of them gave me the shtickle Torah that he learned, since I told him that we were teaching, we were learning Gemara Dezora. Says that his Rebbe said, how come we can eat cereal, packaged cereal? Okay, how come we can eat packaged cereal? After all, it's been cooked, in a goyish factory or something like that. Of course, I'm not talking about the fact that we have an OU on it. So, but how come we can use it? I mean, if you're very strict that you're only going to eat what we call, Bishul Yisrael, only food that's cooked by a Jew, you're never going to use Bishul Akim, anything that has been cooked by a goy. So how come we can do it? So, and with the king, does the king also eat Wheaties or cornflakes or something like that? If it's Eilal Shulchan Malachim, then it should be prohibited to us, right? So he says, but when a king makes a dinner or something like that, would he invite you then in order to eat cornflakes or Cheerios or something like that? So that Eilal Shulchan Malachim implies, somebody something a little more worthwhile. So you don't have to worry, you said, about the cereal. Two of Bela's sons came with their families the other day to visit us.
Lovely.
Yeah, so
wow.
That's nice.
Right. They had to be in America this week, so they came up for the afternoon to visit with us. And we're very happy to see them, to see children that we haven't seen in a long time, including some newcomers. Since the last time in Israel. All right, so getting back over here. So, as I said, Rav Shimi is arguing, right? So, Amar Rav Shimi Minahado. So, first of all, he asks the kasha, and lo and behold, he gives an answer. I got a good kasha for you. Now let me give you my answer. Okay. Says, low kasha. It's not a kasha, he said.